Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Casella.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Casella.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Casella.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, here we go. Jaguars This Week on the air here on Jaguars Radio, live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. You've got the number, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351, at Tony Boselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice Call Loggy. Well, folks, you can win a VIP game experience when the Jaguars finally return home here a week from Sunday to take on the Texans. From gate, you'll get four game day tickets, four VIP Sky Patio lounge passes, a limo for four to and from the game. So stop by your nearby gate gas station and register. Jaguars fans, put gate in your tailgate. Good evening, good evening, good evening. How are you guys?
Great.
Good.
Ready to roll.
Really?
Johnny-O, ready to roll.
Ready to roll.
Well, since
nice of you to come on time.
He did make it on time today. That's kind of a change.
It's
I'm not sure Brian and I have missed a show this year.
Oh, here we go. It's going to get fun.
I'm just throwing it out there.
You sure about that?
It's going to get fun.
Sure. I am sure.
I've had phone calls afterwards said, where's Osh?
I believe that. It's hard to get a word in edgewise.
This might be the easiest show I do all year. Wow. Osh, you fired up tonight? What's on your mind?
That's Wednesday. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. You just look
game
forward
day.
To this. Okay.
As the ex-players here know, game day's when, you know, Wednesday's when you get started.
Right.
So we start gearing up. It's that way as the Jaguars.com guy, too.
Okay.
Ding, ding.
Joe's on his game tonight, too. So where do you want to start? Forward or back?
We got to look back, don't we? We got to win.
All right.
It's only the third time this
second
year.
Second time in the last
gotta,
3 weeks.
Got to relish it.
You got to enjoy it.
Even over the Colts?
Boy, they're bad.
Yeah, they're not very good.
I watched that tape yesterday, Loggy. And they're awful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
What did I tell you, Brian, last week?
They're not as good as their record.
And you heard the same thing.
I did, and I did.
Was I right?
The year the Lions went 0-16.
Right.
I did a few of those games, and they were bad. But they weren't that bad.
Well, where's the disparity?
They're bad everywhere.
The offensive line for the Indianapolis Colts is as bad as I've seen. They look slow, weak, and unathletic.
That's a pretty bad combination.
I mean, they don't look athletic. I mean, they don't get out of their – they're not quick. They're not powerful. You know, usually you have a big, powerful offensive line, but not the most athletic. It's trouble with speed, but they're grinders. Or you have an athletic group that might get pushed around a little bit. They don't look like either.
And they're not – you know, they're worse than they were last year, but they're not incredibly worse. But the bottom line is, you know – for a long time, Peyton.
Yeah, but they're worse. They are worse.
Well, I'm telling you, Tony, they've been bad for a while. I mean,
that coupled with Donald Brown's just a guy. It's hard to tell with the receivers because the quarterback's no good.
Right. Reggie Wayne is not effective because he needs precision passes.
He's never going to create separation.
Right.
He had separation in that game.
Did he?
Yeah. He had some opportunities.
He did it. You're right. I did.
And you could really tell that he was just frustrated because he was just like, I can't do it all.
At what point? Right. At what
can't throw the ball and then run the route and catch it.
And then defensively, I've never seen an 8-man front get gashed the way
You know what's surprising? And I was totally shocked, and I think I said this to Brian early on in this ball game. The Colts were playing their, you know, two Cathy coverage, which is just, I mean, cover two.
Cover two, yeah.
Cover two. Keeping the safeties back. Are you kidding me? Why would you do that?
I guess they figured even when they drop the safety down, it's not much better.
I guess, but I mean, it was.
How long did that last, though? I mean, they got gashed a couple times.
Well,
they
started changing it a little bit, but I mean, even still later on in the ball game, I mean, they still played some cover two and stuff, but I mean, early in the ball game on the early downs to play cover two against the Jaguars, which, you know, their passing game is, you know, a work in progress.
Well, forever, though, and this is not a defense, but. Forever, meaning 10 to 12 years, they have every game they've played offense and defense the same way, assuming they could go beat the other. You know,
they can't beat anybody,
right? But they're not. They're not in the last 10 or 12 years with this coaching staff, a staff that necessarily game plans a whole lot for the other team. They figure they're going to play their defense and go beat you with it.
Yeah, the problem –
they'd have a hard time winning an internal scrimmage right now.
The problem with playing the style of defense that they're trying to keep playing is that you have defensive ends that get up the field. Dwight Freeney does not want to play the run. Dwight Freeney's effort, if I were a Colts fan, I would have a serious problem with the way Dwight Freeney plays right now. I mean,
Mathis,
I'm talking
now?
Quitting on plays. Now, Robert Mathis is balls to the wall,
right.
Great effort, great desire.
I think Freeney's lost a step, though.
I don't know if Freeney has lost a step.
Early
on
in the season, he hadn't lost a step.
But he may have.
I'll watch him Monday night.
But I will say this. Dwight Freeney, at times, runs like he's very old. Now, is that effort or is that age? I don't know.
Did you find it telling that Bill Polian on Monday was quoted as saying that Peyton Manning had no problem with them drafting Andrew Luck?
Nah.
You didn't find that interesting at all?
I don't find much that Bill says during the season telling.
Okay.
Because and he's going to say what needs to be said to get through a situation.
Okay.
And they pretty much make their decisions on what they're going to do after seasons are over.
Well, I was just saying, with everybody, and I'm not saying that he indicated he was going to, but it was interesting that he opened up because for so long, everyone's been pointing now the last, month at the Colts as being an Andrew Luck landing spot, and everyone in Indianapolis is, forget that. We're not focused on that.
They're not winning a game.
Well, but along the way, until this point, Monday, you would never get an admission that they would. Who is Andrew Luck? We're focused on, the Jaguars, the bye week, the Panthers. And then when he commented on it, just the fact that he commented on it got my attention.
I don't know how they win a game.
Well, the schedule certainly doesn't work in their favor.
I don't know how they.
Their quarterback situation is gone.
That they've got a chance to win a game just because they have big play potential on both sides of the ball.
I don't. Not with that. I thought that too, Jeff, until I'd watched that offensive line. They are
very good.
Awful.
Did you see what John Chick did on the on the interception to Costanzo?
Costanzo.
We watched it with Del Rio in his television show that we taped this evening.
Holy cow.
Wow, good Chick. Hey, how did they let Chick go? I guess you got Mathis and Freeney, but that he was big.
Ran him over.
Yeah, all the way back to the quarterback.
Power lifted him and dropped him back into the lap of the quarterback.
And then
quarterback
he was speeding him, spinning him.
Everything.
It was like, somebody help
Jerry
that
Hughes
kid.
Jerry Hughes was active and played a couple snaps.
Yeah.
And they were terrible snaps. And how in the world can you let a John Chick go to keep a guy that is not a player?
All right. So the Jaguars go get a win. You tied at 3. Nothing's going right on the offensive side of the ball. They come out with that long drive in the third quarter. And then the defense. They've scored 4 touchdowns in their last 2 games. 3 of them were short field, the 26-yard line or in, right, thanks to a defensive turnover. That's how this offense is going to score points.
Progress. I was going back looking at all the stats from the season, and this is an interesting stat. 21 points in the last 2 games off of 5 defensive turnovers. In 8 in the previous game, so we're going all the way back to the 7 previous games. In the 7 previous games, the defense has taken the ball away 8 times. Only 6 offensive points scored off of those takeaways. I mean, that's an unbelievable change, and that's a big difference in numbers right there.
Well, when you look at it, in the Texans game, the sack that Session got that was tossed back to Terrence to Clint went to the 7, and then Lowry took it to the 26, and then this week Alu-Alu dives for that fumble and gets it at the 7. So, I mean, you point-blank 2 red zone and then 1 just outside the red zone. I mean, that explains it, but is that the way that this defense is going to have? I mean, they have to give the ball on a short field for this team to score.
Well, the way the offense is playing right now, I mean, that's what you got to do.
Other than the long drive.
Yeah.
What the long drive show you? I mean,
tape. What I saw, and when we can talk about the quarterback more, I saw one play that stood out and gave me a great glimmer of hope of what he can do. Because what has been the one thing we've talked about of being a little bit concerned, a little gun-shy in the pocket, maybe flinching a little bit at times and seeing pressure that's not there. And I think it was in the third quarter. It might have been on the touchdown drive. The free blitzer came. It was a safety. Came a full head of steam, and he stood in there and delivered a strike as he's getting hit in the mouth. and there was not an ounce of ducking or flinching. I mean, he stared it down and threw a BB and took it, and I went to the next play. I said, that is a big-time play.
Yeah, and then the other play that I really liked, the play that gave me cause for excitement, was the touchdown throw to Jarrett Dillard, because it was two-part. One, Jarrett Dillard made a fantastic
move
on the corner.
Move off the ball.
Maybe the best move by a wide receiver that I've seen all year long to get separation.
I'll say this, Chasen West and Jarrett Dillard might need to see more of them.
They're going to.
And then to conclude that play, I've always said that Blaine doesn't throw a lot of touch stuff real well. I mean, that touch pass to Jarrett Dillard where he took some smoke off of the ball and dropped it in there, I mean, that play overall was a thing of beauty.
Yep.
All right, we need a break, folks. We'll come back more with John, Tony, Jeff, and you. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351, at Tony Buscelli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice. Back after this on Jaguars Radio. Jags return home a week from Sunday to take on the Houston Texans. Man, it seems like forever. The last game they played here was October 24th. That is Military Appreciation Day, and if you bring a gently used cell phone to that game, you will provide a member of our overseas military with a 60-minute phone card. So please bring a gently used cell phone to the Jaguars-Texans game on Sunday, November 27th, and help our military. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. All right, do you want to go back to the quarterback? We were talking about that before the break.
No, sure. I thought in the first half that was the worst I'd seen him play all year. I mean, to me, that was the worst half of football that Blaine Gabbert's ever had. And from talking to some people, that they were very surprised at the first half, just because the week of practice that he had leading up to the game, I heard, was outstanding. And they thought that, wow, you know, he's coming around. And then the first half was just, as bad as you'd ever seen him play. And the second half, he kind of bounced back a little bit. And thank goodness for Brayton's penalty on that long drive. I mean, that helped big time.
Kept it moving. From that point forward, they just marched down the field, and there was that touchdown. So, did you see something in the second half besides the throw that you mentioned and the throw that you mentioned,
well,
Tony?
I mean,
are you seeing any hope that the offense can start getting something going? Or are we just going to deal with this 12, 13 points a game the rest
of
the way?
I hope, Brian, because, I mean, holy cow, you've got one of the premier backs in the league. I mean, the offensive line now is starting to gel. I think this week will be the fourth time that they've all played together. As far as, you know, the lineup of, you know, Monroe, Rackley, Meester, Uche, and then, of course, Guy Wimper. You know, so that's gelled. And even though they've played well before, at least you get a little continuity up in front of the quarterback. I know that in that game at Indianapolis, there were some issues with formations. I know there were some communication problems. You know, so I think that really illustrates that, you know, he's still a very young quarterback, and if he doesn't have the complete call, he can't call the play because he doesn't know the whole play yet. You know, and I think that just illustrates that, hey, you know, you got to have some patience with this guy, but I still say this, he still makes throws that make you go, wow. But then he has throws like he had in the first half that you go,
wow.
What?
Whoa. Yeah.
You know, the one at Kasim Osgood's feet. You know, the one to Mercedes was okay. He bounced one to who was one he bounced it to?
Zach Potter.
Zach Potter. I mean, Zach Potter wasn't even turned around yet.
Right.
You know, I mean, throws like that just make you, golly, that's not very good. Yeah. You know, and but in the second half, it got better.
And then the opposite of that, the go-with part is I've never seen an offense where the receivers have such trouble even being remotely open. Even when he has a chance to throw, there are always defenders right there ready to knock the ball down. And it, as Jeff has said many times, there's never an easy throw. So you've got both factors sort of working together to be a really, you know, broken passing offense.
You know the thing that concerned me the most about that game? You take Jason Hill, Mike Thomas, and Mercedes Lewis, and combined, two catches for minus 3 yards in that game in Indianapolis. That's a concern.
But part of it is because Jarrett Dillard and Chasen West looked better.
They look good.
Made the best move we've seen out of a receiver.
But I mean,
we're talking
five catches between those two guys.
I agree with you. I'm just telling you. I mean,
you don't know what you're talking about, Buscelli.
Okay. I probably don't. I know.
Just being argumentative. No, I agree that those two look better.
They look better. I'm not saying any of them are number one or twos or whatever. I'm saying at least, I mean, the move Jarrett Dillard made on the score was like, okay, that's a
good move.
That's a good move. That's what you're supposed to do.
The one that he caught across the middle, I mean, just looked smooth.
That was a beautiful throw,
too. I mean, beautiful throw, beautiful catch, plenty of open room to get the ball in. I mean, that's what you want to start to see this offense to evolve to.
And the good news is, you know, while Mercedes and the drops and everything's a concern, he blocked better.
How about on that run?
He was
the run. What he did to Pat Anger?
Yeah, no, I mean he was very good blocking on Sunday.
Well, that's good because he hasn't been all year long.
Yeah, no, he was outstanding. And the offensive line, Guy Wimper struggled with Robert Mathis. He got run around, but that's he's not the only guy in the NFL that happens.
No, and one play that he really gave up that quick pressure. When I watched that play, I said, was he expecting Maurice to chip?
Yeah, but he was there was a couple he was just so behind. He's not the only guy. But I thought Eugene continues to play very well. I thought Brad was good. I thought Uche was good.
So you're saying Eugene's playing at a high level?
Eugene's playing at a high level. He's playing very well right now.
You have great credibility now.
Thank you very much.
When it's good, it's good. When it's bad, it's bad.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think we're all pretty fair. If we talk about what we see. And right now, Eugene, and it's funny, you know, I had someone just today I was talking with. He said, man, we need to get more offensive linemen. I said, you're wrong. I said, that's the one of our groups on offense that is playing very well right now.
Right.
I mean, we have a top end of the league offensive line, the way they're playing. They run block very well. The protection's much better. It sometimes looks worse than it is because of how out of sync the passing game is. But I thought Eugene played well. I thought Rackley continues to improve.
Uche's still playing very well.
And I think Brad's doing a great job. I've really been impressed with Brad.
Brad may be having one of his best years in the last 4 years.
Really impressed with Brad. I think
take away the snap from earlier in the year,
against the Bengals,
you know, and a couple hits.
Guy Wimper has turned out to be a solid right tackle, a guy you can play winning football with at the right tackle position.
Since he went on injured reserve,
he's dinged up a little bit.
Yeah, he is. They kept looking at his ankle,
knee, and I know that.
Well, that's a concern.
Yeah, he's been a little banged up.
And then Mercedes, and then you got. So going back to where we started, this whole can the offense score more points? Maybe a little. As good as the offensive line's playing, as good as the running back we have, you have to be able to throw the ball and pick up big chunks of yardage. Otherwise, your percentage of the chances of success are very low on long drives because it takes so many plays and there's so many chances for an error to get there.
I think they need
and
to put
you
in,
can't run put 70 in the T-bone. Yards in this league.
Put in the what?
Put in the T-bone.
The T-bone.
Is that what you're calling it now?
That's the offense they run in Denver. The
T-bone. By the way, did you hear
who's going to play quarterback running the T-bone? Greg Jones?
Zach Miller's injured.
Zach Miller's injured.
He's injured.
Greg Jones would be a good guy back there to run that.
Did you hear the shot? I guess I wasn't at the news conference today, but somebody asked, hey, Coach, do you even have a passing game? And his comment was, well, we threw it more than 8 times, didn't we? Laid it right out there.
Yeah.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351.
Just win, baby.
Hey, if you want to burn off those pre-holiday calories, and who wouldn't, you can also do it by supporting a great cause. You can register today for McKenzie's Run, which is a 5K run and walk, and a one-mile fun run that includes a Jumbotron finish on the field here at Everbank, and a post-race celebration with Jackson DeVille, the Roar Cheerleaders, live music, and games. It is a fun family event this Saturday, November the 19th. It begins at 10 o'clock in the morning, and of course, all proceeds go to the Mackenzie Noel Wilson Foundation, which creates programs that help young people all over the world recognize their full potential. Register online at mackenziesrun.org. I'll be there. Come on by and say hello on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. News is next on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Then we return with 90 more minutes. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna and only here on Jaguars Radio. All right, well, Wednesday, November 30th, that is the Wednesday, 2 Wednesdays from now, Wednesday after Thanksgiving, the Auto Spot Tire Pros at 9718 Touchton Road invite you to join them for cookies with the Jaguars rookies, noon till 2, Wednesday, November 30th. They'll be signing autographs, sharing cookies, and giving you a chance to win an autographed football and club seats to the Jaguars Monday night game against the Chargers. Welcome back. We've had some callers hold through the break, so let's grab them now. Luke is in Eastport, Maine. Hello, Luke. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How's everybody doing?
Good.
I got some good news to share, and then I have a question that I'd really like, especially Jeff, to weigh in on. Been a diehard Jaguars fan my whole life, splitting time between, Southern Maine and Western New York, so I saw a lot of Bills games and Patriots games anytime the Jaguars were in town. I am very soon going to be, instead of Luke from Eastport, I'm going to be Luke from Jacksonville. I'm coming down there, and I'm going to be scooping up two season tickets, so I'm really excited for that.
Sweet. That's good news.
Yeah, and my question is, and the reason, Jeff, I think you'd be a good source of info on this is, you know, it's about defensive line. Thinking about something you guys said a couple weeks ago, talking about defensive ends being just about as rare as quarterbacks to find that big kind of home run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way we've been playing this year is great to see guys like Chick and Roth step up. But something I was wondering on is, because Brian, I think you were talking about Derek Harvey and how, you know, he killed it against Ohio State. He showed a lot of promise in college.
Sure.
But clearly that didn't translate to the pros. So I was just wondering, you know, is it work ethic? Is that something that a scout can plainly see? Like when you have a DeMarcus Ware versus a Derek Harvey, does one look dominant in college, but you can see the cracks and you know that they're probably not going to make it in the pros? Or is there a good way to tell, basically, when you're looking at a stellar college defensive end to be a lot more safe, to tell if you will get that DeMarcus Ware or Robert Mathis in the pros?
Well, I think first and foremost, you can tell whether a guy has the physical tools to be able to be a pass rusher at the NFL level. They've got to have that to begin with. But college pass rushing, I think, is pure athleticism more so than it is in the NFL. I think NFL, just like all positions, I mean, you have to develop techniques and fundamentals and a repertoire as a pass rusher to be able to win at this level. All the tackles are athletic at the college level. They're not all athletic. You can just be a better athlete than a lot of those guys. And I think with John Chick has worked at his craft for a long period of time and has the desire to be good. He has the work ethic. He has the intelligence to see what he needs to do better. Jeremy Mincy is another prime example. He's worked at his craft for a number of years. He's gotten the opportunities. He's kept working at it. You've got to have a work ethic to be able to be an accomplished pass rusher in the National Football League level. Dwight Freeney is a special case. I mean, he's just a freak. I mean, the first step he has is maybe the fastest ever in the history of pro football as a pass rusher.
But he has great technique, too.
But he does have great technique because if he didn't have that, forget it.
One of the best spin moves in the game's ever seen.
And speaking to that point, Jeff, he didn't have great technique when he came out. But he did what you said. You know, he had the desire because he knew pretty quickly that he wasn't going to be able to get by on just speed. He could have been a good pass rusher on just speed. But he did what you're talking about. He learned how to use his hands a little bit. He learned how to use, you know, spin enough to complement what he already had.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys, you know, they know what they do well, and they know what they can't do well, and then they continue to work on the things that they don't do well, and they try to hone what they do well. And I think that's what separates a very good pass rusher from a guy who's just an athlete. You know, Tony, you've played against some of the best pass rushers in the game, and you know, I don't want to go to the guy that you faced against Baltimore who was just phenomenal motor, the Tasmanian Devil.
Michael McCreary.
But Bruce Smith, Reggie White, they all had a main move, and then they seemed to, and most of the great pass rushers have always had a complement that looked just like their main move. And I think that made it hard for tackles.
Every great pass rusher has to have at least two moves. And I think every great pass rusher.
Well, you really got to have three.
No, but at least two.
You got to have at least two.
You have to have two really good moves in the third count.
But what I say as far as three is, one, you have to have some way to get to the outside, whether it's a setup, a chop swim, pure speed, power rip. Then you have to have a counter to that to come back to the inside. But the one move that all of them have to have for the most part,
power.
I think there's been one pass rusher in the history of the game that has not had it, and that's Derek Thomas, but you got to have power.
That's where I was going. So you have to have – and I say two moves, but one of the moves has to be power. Now, because the other move is an inside outside move. Either way, you have to be able to work both sides of that. But you have to have power. And I'll be honest, I mean, when I played against Derek Thomas, it was one of the, I don't want to say easier games, but I did not.
He never threatened you.
I was never worried about it because I knew he couldn't power me. And so if you couldn't power me, you couldn't get to the quarterback. It was impossible. But if you have power, and you don't have to be great power, but you have to be able to scare an offensive tackle in the sense that when I say scare, that knows that if they get too high or they get too lazy, they're going to end up on their back or in the quarterback's lap. Dwight Freeney has that. No one talks about it, but Dwight Freeney's
he's got it.
Best move maybe better than the spin is the bull rush, because he has power and he comes downhill with a lot of speed. And he hits him right underneath the chin, and he'll drive guys back. And he sets up the power and the speed off of it. And I'll never forget playing. I was actually in the Pro Bowl before it was the Pro Bowl back when I was playing. It was not just touch football. They actually now it's getting to the point where you just walk around and don't do anything. You would play about three quarters speed until third down or the 2 minute drill. Then everybody decided, you know, we're going to try to embarrass you and get go after it. But I say that because I had to play right tackle, which was not my natural position, and Reggie White was the left end. In the entire week, went from just relaxing, enjoying the whole time of me now worrying about, I do not want to get thrown
out of the bar
on the hump move.
Right.
That's all I thought about the entire week. I'd see Reggie, and I'd sit there, and friendly guy, we talk, and I'm thinking in the back of my mind, you are going to try to hump me out and throw me out of the and make so. I say that, so going into that game, which any other Pro Bowl, I never even thought about game plan or anything. He's go out and play. But I said, he can't beat me with speed, so I can make up on the speed. I'm not going to let him hump me. And if he bulls me, then he's going to bull me because I can't stop all three. And I'll just do the best I can to adjust to it. And that was my mindset. And so going in, I remember, I set heavy inside. He tried to hump me, couldn't do it. Three times he tried to hump me. I'm like, it's not going to happen. Tried to run around me. I was fast enough to recover. Then one play, he decided on a third down and long that I'm going to bull rush you. And guess what he did? He bull rushed me. And I ended up back with him. I was smart enough not to
try to. Tony got a half a sack.
I ended up. No. I was smart enough not to try to clamp down and get run over. And so I kind of guided him, kind of brought him back with me. Ball was gone, and we ended up next to the quarterback together.
He got a half a pressure.
I got a half a pressure. And so, but I say that anytime I would go play a defensive end, and we're talking about what makes a good defensive end. A defensive end who's successful, who is going to be a guy who's going to pressure the quarterback and get after it, has to be a guy that either main move is speed and can change up with the power because he's so fast, he gets a guy on his heel and he can use power, or a guy who has good power and then works off that power, hand moves, rip, a club, inside, outside, a spit, whatever it is.
So is Freeney the only guy in the game today that you think would give you trouble? I mean, in terms of you up, make you worry a little bit about how he's going to do it?
He would be as all the guys I watch, he'd be the biggest guy I would be worried about.
Right.
DeMarcus Ware is a good player, but watching him, he wouldn't worry me as much because he's more upright, and I think he gives up his chest a little bit sometimes, and I think I wouldn't be as worried about the power. Dwight would worry me because at 6'7", he's probably only 6'2", is leverage. I'd have a hard time, just getting – and then the power and the speed. Of all the players, I've always said that's the one guy I'd be like, dang it. To crack the code, and I'd have – I mean, because it's funny, when I do games and get ready for it, I actually watch it sometimes just as an offensive lineman and start game planning in my head. How would I block him? What would be my game plan going in?
He's special because he's got all three.
He's got three.
Yeah.
Rarely.
Power, speed. Speed, spin, power.
Yeah, and like Bruce Smith, he was great. Don't get me wrong.
Power, rip, and spin.
But he couldn't power me for whatever reason. He could bowl me as hard as he wanted, and I had the confidence that I could stop it. And even if you had a good bowl and I was confident I could stop it, there was no problem. The flip side of that is the one night we played Minnesota against John Randall, and he played end. I didn't have confidence I could stop his power, and it was much like Dwight Freeney. He's shorter in leverage. He gave me fits the entire night. I never felt like I blocked him. Even if he didn't get in the play, I felt like I was chasing him around. And so it goes back to, but the good pass rushers develop that. They understand. They work at their craft. And what makes great guys, whether it's Bruce Smith, There's very few Reggie Whites. Reggie Whites was one of the kind that was so gifted, talented, he's so much stronger that he could have the one move and just, I mean, he was dominant. LT probably like that. But there's few. Those are few and far, and they did things naturally. But I think all the great pass rushers, they work on their craft, and they become great with their hands. They understand leverage. They understand how to work the angles with power. Rarely, and this is the problem, the transition all the way back to where we started from college to the pros, in my opinion, when it comes to defense. Most great college defensive ends are great athletes, and they just go get after it and come after it, and they aren't willing to humble themselves and do the work and spend the time of training themselves and honing their craft to become a great pass rusher.
All right, we need a break. More to come. Jaguars This Week after this on Jaguars Radio. This mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's Payment Estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. Let's stay with the defensive end theme for just a moment. James is in Kentucky with a thought on Jeremy Mincy. Hello, James.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Good.
Hey, thanks for having me on again. Just a few questions on your guys' thoughts on Jeremy Mincy. Just what's your guys' evaluation of him so far? What do you think he could become as far as potential-wise? And is he a player you think the Jaguars have to lock up at the end of the year, of course, if the money's right? And I'll take it there, guys. Thanks.
He reminds me of Paul Spicer.
Big time.
Paul Spicer was on the practice squad when I was here. And I think maybe the last year I was here was active roster. And Paul was one of those guys that was just a pain in the rear to practice because he was always working and working his craft, and he had great hands, and his hands got better throughout the year, and he just continually to work. If Paul Spicer would have gone to the combine at any point in his career, he probably would have been, you know, too slow, you know, not quick enough, not, you know, can't jump high enough, whatever. But the guy made foot plays in the football. He was always around the ball. He made tackles, got sacks, got pressure on the quarterback. Jeremy Mincy reminds me of that. He is a guy that works very hard. He is paid the price. He works on his craft. He plays the game the right way. And when I say that, he plays very hard from the snap of the ball to the end of the whistle. And you know you're going to get great effort. And I've seen him get better each year. And I think ultimately you need guys like Jeremy Mincy on your team if you want to win. Will he ever be – is he a Pro Bowl guy? I mean, he hasn't shown us that. I mean, any guy can develop that. But I think he's a guy throughout his career on good years can have 7 or 8 sacks. And he's a guy that can be your third defensive end. And if you need him to start, he can start. Very good on first and second down. He's stout against the run. He plays very hard. And he shows a little bit of a propensity to rush the passer from the three technique in sub. So
yeah, I've had a lot of people – tell me that, you know, from in this building, you know, they'd love to have Jeremy as that third guy,
but he keeps on earning this first guy.
I keep saying,
well, on this team, I think he's the first guy. I'm saying if you went out and signed or got a big time guy,
yeah, if you got a big time guy, but then wouldn't you think that Jeremy would go to the other side out of all the groups, all the remaining ends that you have now?
Absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
So right now,
think about Mincy.
Jeremy
Mincy.
No, you're right. He's the best defensive on the team.
Right in my mind. Jeremy Mincy has earned the right to be called a frontline guy.
And that's a spot where a lot of times you have
I agree.
Who makes plays on occasion. Mincy's, I don't say it's a rare defensive end, but it's not something you see every day where every play you know what you're getting out of.
Yeah,
every game you're going to get
100%
production.
100%
effort.
He's a starter. Defensive end is a position where a lot of guys disappear for a game or two.
I think also that the thing that I have really enjoyed watching is that Tony was talking about hands. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Mincy may do one of the best jobs with his hands of getting offensive linemen's hands off of them than any defensive lineman maybe that's ever played here. He does an amazing job of just little subtleties with his hands and keeps them active all the time where they just can't ever get a hold of them. And I think that yes, they need to look at
locking
Jeremy Mincy up. There's two guys that I and I don't know all the contractual situations of the guys on the team, but the two that I know of that need to be looked at, Jeremy Mincy, Dwight Lowry. Dwight Lowry has had a great year for the Jaguars.
Why did the Jets let him go?
I have no idea.
Dwight Lowry would be the best safety on the Jets right now.
And then they Jeremy Nancy, Dwight there. Lowry. I mean, those two guys, I would have to think that, you know, that some consideration, and maybe the talks are going on now, I don't know. But they
for
need to find a way to keep him.
But
that's a steal.
But sticking with Mincy, he is a guy, and I said third. He's your when I say third guy, that means he's one of the three guys you rotate during the game, not necessarily a backup. But I think he's a guy from now, as long as he stays healthy, and you wish the best for him there.
3 years ago, what I tell you about Jeremy Mincy?
He's a guy
best pass rusher on the roster,
best defensive end on the roster,
and he still is.
And he still is, and you're right.
And I just love how he plays. And I love the fact that you can put him down in three technique and third down, and he'll get after the rushing from that.
And you know, and physically, he really has, you know, we talk about working at the craft, you know, the technique and stuff. Physically, Jeremy has.
He's 270 now.
He has gotten bigger. He's gotten stronger.
Well, there's a perfect example because the call that started this conversation about defensive ends, he asked about Derek Harvey. Derek Harvey and Jeremy Mincy both at Florida. At Florida, Derek Harvey was the big stud, you know, athletic.
Game against Ohio State.
Game against Ohio State. I always thought he was looked a little stiff, but whatever. He was big, strong. He was the guy. Jeremy Mincy was just the afterthought. Jeremy Mincy decided that getting into the NFL wasn't the end. It was just a means of where he wanted to be is be a successful professional football player.
And I think how they came in had a lot to do with that.
I agree.
You see that with a lot of guys, and that you have a guy that comes in undrafted, late round pick. Is not given anything, and then you have a high pick, and they come in and they think that they're entitled.
Right.
Yeah, but the great, but Jeff, the great ones, even when they're high picks,
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
And so sometimes that just reveals character.
No, I know. Yeah, I think you're right.
As you guys talked about, you know, the thing when I started covering the NFL in '95, the thing that was most interesting in the first two or three years was talking to you guys about different positions, and pass rusher was the most fascinating to me in the sense that. It was such a learned skill, and I guess everything in the NFL is, but that skill is very rarely had by a guy coming out, and it takes two or three or four years to really perfect it.
I think it's the second hardest position to transition in from college to pro. Quarterback being number one, rush end being number two.
I think you're right.
Because it is so different, because Jeff said it, in college, most of the time, the guys playing left or right tackle were big, strong guys, but not athletic. And so if you were an athletic guy who had some strength and could run and move, you were going to get after the quarterback and make it difficult. I can tell you, I remember playing in college, there was very few guys. There was not pass rush moves. You just sat and you blocked, and that was it. And so you go to the next level. Now, all of a sudden, you're rushing the passer, and you have guys that know how to pass block.
But you have to study.
And that are athletic, that are big. They don't – you know, you're not going to play left tackle in the NFL unless – even the worst left tackle is a big, strong, athletic guy who can move. And you're not just going to run around that guy. You have to beat him. And so you all of a sudden have to do something you've never been asked to do.
Perfect example, when I was in college – I mean, a couple of left tackles that we had at Virginia. I mean, you know.
Ray Roberts,
but Ray was real young, you know, at that time. But, I mean, we had Paul Gallange and other. I mean, these guys, you take them out on the basketball court, I mean, they were just, you know, all they were was roadblocks. You know, they had no athleticism.
Yeah.
You know, and then come to New York and Jeff Criswell, I mean, he'd take you one-on-one in basketball. Come down here and Tony, we'd be doing running drills. You know, 6'7", 320 pounds is running with me during conditioning
drills.
Yeah,
it's different. It's just
you didn't
different.
Have that in college.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the disparity between the college level and the pro level.
And on that, until we break for news here at the top of the hour, Jim Pontevedra, stay with us if you can. We will grab you first out of the chute on the other side of the news. And I want to talk about Matt Schaub and his injury and what you think about the Texans and where the South goes. All that and more in the second hour of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio. All right, hour number two now. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Tony Boselli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato,
And before we begin, and we'll go to Jim, who has kindly held through the news, Bueller Swiss Watch Company is proud to be the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get your Bueller Swiss Watch at Jacobs Jewelers in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala. Lorraine's Diamond Tree is in Middleburg, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. And as promised, Jim in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Listen to you every week. Thank you. Enjoy the program. I've got a question, and I'll take it off the air. How much of Blaine Gabbert's offensive problems are due to inadequate or insufficient coaching? I'll take it off the air. Thanks, guys.
That's kind of a hard question to address because, for number one, you know, we don't get to see the coaching
right
during the season, first and foremost. Coaching from quarterback coach, wide receiver coach, I do know this. I don't care if he's got the greatest coach in the world. There still is going to be a learning curve involved for any young player. You go back and you look at every quarterback in history, and I'm talking Hall of Fame quarterbacks, mm-hmm. and you look at their first year performance. They're all right there kind of, I don't want to say as low right. as Blaine Gabbert, but they're all down at the bottom.
Right, and as much as you talk about, you know, I watched Christian Ponder the other night. He looked really good in spots, and he threw the ball right to Charles Woodson in spots. I mean, you know, there's ups, there's downs for all these guys. I don't know how to gauge that accurately enough to answer the question. Because you don't see it, and you don't know. Certainly, he has things he needs to improve on, and I think the off season will be the best time for that because he'll have time to really be coached. But I don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer to that too. The one thing that I do know is that everybody can be better on the offense. You know, when you only have basically one net yard more passing than you do rushing, it's not good enough. You know, the passing game's not good enough. And so all those involved, whether it be, you know, wide receivers, wide receiver coach, quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, play calling, whatever, it's not where it needs to be yet. But to be able to say, you know, the coaching I would give a C or an F or an A, you don't know. No, we don't get to see it.
I will add this, though. While let's hold judgment for now, you can make that judgment by the end of the season to see if he's progressed. Because if he hasn't progressed, then that's on him, but it's also on the coaches. A coach's job, and every coach down there will tell you, is to teach and to take the talent that you're given and make it better. And now we're midstream, so you don't want to make a judgment midstream.
Sure.
But I think it's a very fair question or a very fair topic to talk about and evaluate come January.
Well, who gets the evaluation, Mike Shepard, the quarterback's coach, or Dirk Cutter, the offensive coordinator?
I think it has to start with Mike Shepard, the quarterback coach, because he's his direct coach. And then you look at, from there, you go to your offense coordinator and look at the entire scheme. And then at some point, you got to look at the wide receivers and the wide receivers coach, because that's part of the passing game. That can make your quarterback look better and make his job easier if you're doing a good job. So, but I don't like making those judgments midseason because we don't get to see them out there. Last time we got to see him coach was during training camp. But I think you can make a judgment looking at the overall progress once the season's over.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. All right, now to the story that hit Monday night. If the Jaguars were better than 3-6, it would have been a bigger story, but lots of people are talking about it, and that is that Matt Schaub is likely done for the season for the Texans, even though they have not officially ruled him out or put him on injured reserve. So what does that really mean for the South race? Are they so much further ahead? Is their defense so good? Is their running game so good that it won't affect him? What exactly do you think the loss of Matt Schaub will mean for the Texans and their playoff hopes?
My opinion is that Houston has a defense that they've never had before. They have a running game that is not just a one-man show. They have two backs now. They have an offensive line that is one of the better offensive lines in the league. Matt Schaub was having a good year, not a great year. And that passing attack is based off of a lot of play action. I think Houston right now is on a too big of a roll to lose it, even with Matt Leinart.
It'll hurt, but it won't. I don't think it'll hurt them enough for a team that's 3-6 right now and hasn't won consecutive games.
Well, take away 3-6 for a minute. I mean, the Titans are what, a game back, two games right. back. I mean, do you see anybody being, or do you think they are just that much better than the rest of the division right now?
I think this will tighten them up. I'm with Jeff. I don't think, you know, because they have Andre Johnson and because Matt Schaub threw for a bunch of yards last year, or 2 years ago particularly, there was sort of a perception of them as a passing team for a while, and they're not. I mean, they are a run-oriented team that, you know, they can protect Matt Leinart on a lot of fronts.
I've seen them a couple times this year.
Well, you saw them this
past Sunday. I do not think it affects them winning the division. I think it affects how deep they can go in the playoffs.
Okay.
I think both Jeff and John are dead on. They're a very good running team. And this is why I don't think it affects them at all during the regular season. Did it hurt them when they lost Andre Johnson?
Right.
Didn't hurt them a bit.
Right, barely noticed.
Or Mario Williams, their defense is number one in the league.
Yeah, but take the defense away, and that's a whole different reason, I think, why, because I don't think Mario Williams is an outside linebacker. But Andre Johnson is one of the best wide receivers in football, and they lost him, and it was not even a hiccup. That's because they don't ask. Having a premier wide receiver outside is a bonus. It's a cherry on top. They are a run first, like Jeff said, play action pass, use your tight ends, naked boots, legs.
Are they the best offensive line in football?
Right now, yes.
That's what I think.
Right now, yes. But now what they're asked to do. I don't know if they're the best drop back passing, pass block and sit there and have to pass block for 50 times.
For what they do, they're
what
the best.
They're to do, they're very, very good. And they have a very great, good scheme. Who they are is they're the 1997-98 Denver Broncos.
Right.
That is the
they
offense
Alex
they
Gibbs
run.
In and
but with maybe
Jerry
more
Kubiak.
Talent.
No, but not at the quarterback position.
No. I'm talking
and not at the running back position.
I'm talking up front.
Up
really?
Front, yes.
Because that
yes.
was a talented team.
Yeah. You know what? They're not as good.
Right
tackles.
Tackle back
no,
then.
Tony Jones?
No. Not Tony Jones. The other
guy. Gary
that
Zimmerman.
Gary Zimmerman's left.
No. The right tackle. Well, Tony Jones was there.
He was the right tackle.
But they had another guy when we played him in the playoffs.
That was the year before Tony Jones got there. But the 2 years they went to back-to-back Super Bowls, Tony Jones was their right tackle. Yeah. Gary Zimmerman was their left.
And Nalen was
the year before.
Center.
The year before, there was the other right tackle I can't think
of. In 96
of.
When we beat
yes,
him.
Yes, yeah, it was a different guy. But the year
I'm thinking of.
That offensive line with Zimmerman and Tony Jones.
Yeah.
Those two tackles and Nalen as the guard.
Nalen was center.
Shareless was, I mean, center. Shareless was okay. And Brian Habib.
Yep.
Yeah, they were a good line.
I mean, the two tackles in the center. Were
but amazed. They ran the same scheme same because – and Alex Gibbs, remember, he came in a couple years ago to help Kubiak convert the scheme.
They're not as good as that Denver offense.
It's pretty good.
But they're very good.
Left tackle's really good.
And Eric Winston, the right tackle, made the preseason. I mean, the midseason All-Pro team.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's
center,
playing at a high level. The center Chris Myers
well.
Is very good.
The left guard's playing well.
So
what's his name? 74.
If you wouldn't ask me,
drawing a blank.
I know his name. Too.
74. They got him in free agency.
Tate, not Tate.
No.
We'll look it up at the break.
Anyway, yeah. It doesn't matter.
We got to do it now.
But they run that. Zone scheme, naked scheme, and so it won't affect them because Andre Johnson's the cherry on the top. Now, when you get in the playoffs and the better teams can take away one thing and they're going to force you to do what you're not great at.
Wade Smith.
And who's their quarterback's coach? The old Greg Knapp, right?
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing is that before the Houston game this year and then ever since Matt Leinart has been there, every time before the game.
He's
Greg Knapp
early.
Is out there working with Matt Leinart.
He was there Sunday too.
On everything.
I actually think Matt Leinart, and maybe in this full disclosure, SC bias and wanting it to work out, I just got a feeling, I'm not saying he's going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback, but I have a feeling that he's going to do a good job playing quarterback for the Houston Texans because what they're going to ask him to do is going to fit him.
Well, he stayed there for a reason. I mean, he had a chance to leave and go back to Pete Carroll, and he stayed there for a reason. So we'll see if it works out.
Be interesting to watch.
And you look at the rest of the division. I mean, I want us to be the best team in the division, but we're not right now.
No.
And Tennessee has a lot of holes as well.
The two tackles that played right tackle in that 96 season were Broderick Thompson.
Broderick Thompson's one
and
I faced.
Jamie Brown.
Yep.
So
Okay, yeah, that's the year I was thinking of, that this line in Houston is better than that. And then in
Tony Jones came the next year.
97, Tony Jones and Zimmerman came.
It was because they traded him so that they could get Ogden. Because he was with the Browns, Ravens, and they traded him. So.
No, they already had Ogden, but they wanted to move Ogden to left tackle because Ogden's rookie year, he played guard, and Tony Jones played left
tackle. Tony Jones was a fantastic player.
You bet.
Fantastic player.
Yeah, very underrated.
You know, and then they put David Diaz and Fonte in there at once Brian Habib left, and they never dropped a beat. They were a great running team. All right, we need a break, and we'll take it now. If you want to burn off pre-holiday calories and support a great cause, register today for McKenzie's Run, the 5K run and walk and 1 mile fun run that is this Saturday, November the 19th at 10 o'clock in the morning. All proceeds benefit the Mackenzie Noel Wilson Foundation. McKenzie'sRun.org. Back after this on Jaguars Radio. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna Live from Everbank Field. And we go to the phone lines. John is in Green Cove Springs, up first in this segment. Hello, John.
Hey, guys. How you doing tonight?
Good.
I've heard, this is something that during work I can't listen to you guys because you guys aren't on. And the other sports stations and stuff, and they say stuff that I just totally cannot believe that they're saying, you know, like Tim Tebow things and everything else. But the thing is, Gene Smith, about his selections and stuff, that guy, I think, has done a phenomenal job picking people. And if they run this guy out of town, he's going to be one of the guys on the top list of people that every other team's going to want. I mean, you know, guys like Collins, Mincy. I mean, you know, he pulls people out of the hat. That, you know, where are these people coming from? I mean, can you help me convince the people that this guy is somebody we need here?
You know, I think with the draft picks that Gene has had, I think we're starting to see that a lot of the ones from his first year are really starting to play and play well, with the exception of Evan Britton, who's been battling injuries for the last 2 years. That draft class, his first draft class, elite draft class.
Derek Cox.
Starting corner, Jennings. Starting defensive tackle, starting left tackle, and most likely a starting right tackle. In one draft. One draft.
Well, here's
that's an amazing accomplishment in one draft.
Well, I'll even make it even simpler than that. If you want to go argue with your friends at the water cooler. This team was the 30th ranked defense in the NFL last year and was awful. This year, they're top five.
Right.
Well, and if you look.
Just say 1 year.
If you look at how that's improved, your leading tackler, Paul Posluszny.
Free agent.
Also has.
Anyone could have gotten him.
Six
but
tackle
we got
for
him.
Losses, 1.5 sacks.
And the interception last week that ended that drive.
Your safety. Leaves all of the defensive backs and tackles. Dwight Lowry also has.
Seventh round pick.
Interception. Dwan Landry leads them in tackles. Dwight Lowry leads them in interceptions. Acquisition via the trade. Your nickelback, who has 2 interceptions, was acquired in free agency.
Plus a sack and a forced fumble.
I mean, to be able to – that may be the hardest thing to do in all of the roles that a general manager has to fill. Is picking the right guys in free agency.
Well, look at 08.
Because when you spend the money in free agency, first and foremost, you're giving money to the guys, and they got the money.
Right.
They got the money.
Jerry Porter.
They got to be self-motivated guys. They have to be special people. And all the people that he got on defense so far have produced and produced in a big way.
More often than not, and I've said it before on this show, more often than not when you do what the Jaguars did, it sets you back.
It did in 08.
It did the opposite. It set them, you know, not only is the defense good this year, the guys that they've got aren't aging, breaking down guys. There's little reason to believe that these guys that they signed won't be pretty good players in the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, there's no guy that you look at and go, well.
Why won't they get, they should get better?
Right. That's my point. I mean.
Yeah, I agree.
But usually with free agents.
Oh, it's the other way.
You bring them in and you're kind of holding their breath or, you know. But I don't think you can be commended enough for that job. I mean, the thing that people are frustrated by, there's one element of the team that is not functioning, and it's causing 3-6. And that's the argument everybody's using against Gene. The people who are talking at the water coolers against him are using that against him.
And my response to that would be, Do you realize how bad this roster was after 08?
Pretty bad.
Do you realize how many times we missed before the 09 draft?
Right.
Fewer broken parts on this team than there were.
It was always a 4-year rebuild.
In 08.
And we are in always year three.
Right. There's one more draft to make it 4. While you guys were gone, John and I had this conversation, and I recalled a conversation that I did on TV with Terry McDonough, and I said, you know, no exaggeration, don't stretch it. How many years, how many drafts do you need? He said 4. In 4 years, we'll have built a roster that over time will be able to win consistently. Well, that's next year. That's why that wide receiver, right? What if they apply the principles to wide receiver and offense that they did to linebacker and defensive back and defense this year?
I mean, well, they tried in year 2 of Gene Smith's draft, but look at where they were. 4th, 5th, 6th round
yeah,
picks.
Late.
I mean, it's hard to do that.
No, you gotta
if
go
you
get
can hit
one,
you'd felt real good about it. Now you got Mike Thomas, who was a 4th round pick. Not bad,
right.
But
he's not a number one.
He's not a number one, and we all know that.
Yeah, but now you go spend money if there's a free agent next year and find one in the draft, and you apply this kind of free agency to the offensive side of the ball in year 4, then you're ready to go.
Well,
if your quarterback
and I don't think you're going to need that kind of effort and free agency next year. You're going to have to take care of some of the guys you got on defense and then offensively sprinkle a few in and then draft well.
And the other thing you hear about that people complain about with Gene is, why does he pick all these small school guys? And you know,
right, Osh?
I mean, how many times? I mean, if I hear that,
I'm worn out. I mean,
oh, you?
Yeah. I mean, it's
it doesn't. And here's the thing you have to realize. If you're one of those people, or if you argue with one of those people, it's an unwinnable argument because those people don't want to hear the truth.
Right.
Derek Cox is a starting corner. I would love to go back and look at that draft, and we're not going to do it, and go look at what other corners
right.
are playing at his level right now.
Well,
from
people
any
complain
school.
About Will Wright. You know, from what you guys tell me, you know, you guys who have played line in the NFL tell me that this kid is going to be
good.
A long-term starter.
I've been told by other teams we wanted him.
Right.
Will Rackley could play.
It's hard for people to
from Temple.
Well, Dwight Lowry's from San Jose State. That's not exactly a major
those
market.
Two guys. Or just go Knighton is a premier. Or
right.
Okay, I'll take one step back just to be conservative. A top end one technique in this league.
How about Meester, Northern Iowa?
Well, I'm just doing the last few years with
but I mean, you
drafts.
Can go,
I
go
agree.
Machine the whole thing. Yeah,
go around
but
the
my,
league.
But my,
there's plenty of them.
And it's so, but there's no arguing with you out there that have that argument because you know.
And it's hard to make people understand that once the draft rolls around, they're not looking at school name on guys when they're picking.
They
anymore.
Don't care.
It's all about the grade they've got on guys. It's about the research. They've done so much research in him that they're not sitting there going, well, did he play in the SEC? Did he play in the Big – it's –
how about the guy that they
it
had –
it doesn't matter at that point.
How about the guy that they had starting at left tackle against the Pittsburgh Steelers from Grand Valley State that looked jam up?
Right.
Played well.
It's
– hey, come on.
People don't want to accept, but it's not a relevant factor.
There's only one weakness in Gene's draft. He's only drafted one guy from Virginia. And he hasn't drafted any from USC. But there's a reason for that. USC has fallen on tough times.
What do you mean? We got some good players. Better than you. My goodness.
All right. We have reached the end of another half hour of this program. And fans, you can text BBQ to 72239. That's BBQ 72239. That will enter you for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest, which means you can hand the game ball to the referee when the Jaguars are home next against the Texans a week from Sunday. And with that, I'll give you the phone number one more time, 800-355-NFL1. If you're local, 355-6351. Twitter, at Tony Boselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice, and we'll answer some Twitter questions as we roll into the final half hour. We'll look around the National Football League at some of the big games. We'll all get to see Mr. Tebow tomorrow night when the Broncos and Jets play on Thursday Night Football. So, you're excited about that one, Loggy?
I think Rex Ryan's got something for old Timmy.
Here we go. All right, step aside. News is next from the good folks over at News Talk Radio, WOKV, and then we'll finish the show up here on Jaguars Radio.
When you're looking for department store style at discount prices this Christmas season, and folks, that's coming a week from Friday, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart, 6 Jacksonville location. Stein Mart, more fashion, less price. Jaguars this week presented by Yetna live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. But 24 minutes left in the program. Let's grab Robert, who is calling from Las Vegas. Hello, Robert.
Hey, guys. I just had a comment about Derek Cox. It seems like he's been a complete stud this year. I mean, I honestly can't remember a single pass that went for like more than 15 yards against him. You guys, you know, watch the film. You're clearly the expert. So do you think he could be like a shutdown, like top five corner in this league?
I don't think a shutdown corner, but a really good corner. You know, the shutdown guys have elite quickness and change of direction. And I don't know if Derek has that, but he's got, you know, he's long, he's fast, but the change of direction thing like a Deion Sanders had, like a Darrell Revis has.
Yeah, but
doesn't quite have that, but I mean, okay, we're talking about two of the best players ever in the history of the league.
There's only two of those in the last decade.
No, I know. I
think he can be
that.
A top end. I mean, it depends how you define elite. Are you talking about all-time greats like the guy Jeff just talked about, or can he be a guy who is mentioned in the upper echelon of corners in this
right.
league that can fight for, you know, have a chance to make a Pro Bowl one day and fight for that type of – I think he can. Now, because I'm not going to put a ceiling on Derek Cox because he has all the talent in the world. He had 8 interceptions in the first 2 years he played. He plays the ball well. He's in the right place. I think it's up to Derek Cox how good he wants to be.
Well,
I mean, really? I mean, if he works at his craft and gets better and mm-hmm. dedicated, I think he has the talent to be very good.
And I think Derek Cox exemplifies something that, you know, fans have a tough time dealing with sometimes, is that guys get better. You know, guys don't come into the league generally as rookies playing at usually a very high level. Tony, you were an exception. You played very well, you know, from the start. But most guys who aren't
he had a
top
good learning
15
curve
picks,
in training camp working
yeah,
with me.
You know,
I owe it all to Jeff.
He had some easy practices then, no doubt. But he
built my confidence up a lot.
But most guys need a year or two to develop and start playing at a level where they can be depended on. You know, you can play, and then there's a level where they're depending on you to make plays. And for most guys, that takes time. Eugene Monroe, you know, is playing better this year than he ever has. Derek Cox. Sometimes guys are not judgeable their first year.
And I think the problem here has been when you're not very good or you're struggling.
Those guys have to play immediately.
Those guys have to play immediately, and the focus is on them. If you're on a better team, or even if you need them to play, they're just part of a big – wins cover up a lot.
Right.
Or if you're winning and they can take a year to develop, you don't hear about them, and then they come in like, man, he's really good. We draft
right.
well. Well, he took, you know, the last year and a half to develop into that type of player. I
right.
think that's – it's a great point, John.
And I know – go ahead, Jeff.
In the last couple games, Derek Cox has played lights out. I mean, lights out. But,
so,
I mean, it's still going to hurt, you know,
sure.
not having Rasheen Mathis, because Rasheen was having his best year and, gosh, when – 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
5 years?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a number of years since.
Yeah, 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Rasheen was playing that well.
He played well in 06 until the end. So, yeah, 05 was the last time he's played dominant like this.
I mean, to go back to what we were talking about a second ago, though, about the roster not being where it will be in a year or two, hurting the younger players, everybody's on Cecil Shorts, and obviously he has not done anything like what we thought he would do in training camp. Pierre Garçon, who played at Mount Union, he didn't play at all for the Colts in 08, I believe it was. He caught 4 passes. The next year, once Marvin Harrison retired, in his second year, he came on and he played. So,
but even then, they didn't count on him as to be the guy.
No, not to be the guy.
They had Dallas Clark and Reggie Wayne.
They counted on him to start, but
yeah.
The point is, you know, if Pierre had been forced to play even as a third guy as a rookie, I don't know that he would have been any more effective than Cecil Shorts has been. They knew when they drafted Pierre, they told everybody flat out, he might return some punts, he might catch some passes at the end of the year, but he's not going to play immediately. Cecil was put in a different situation, so But the Colts had a far more developed roster at that point than the Jaguars did in 2011.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Lee joins us from Ponte Vedra. Hello, Lee.
Good evening, gentlemen. Quick question, not an easy question. What do we do strategically to win next week against Cleveland?
Well, the first thing that you want to do against Cleveland is get out to a fast start. Cleveland has been outscored in the first quarter by a ridiculous number. It's like 58 or something to 8. And if you can do that, the thing that the Browns have not done well all year long is stop the run. So if you can get out and score a couple points early, you're going to play to your strength, which is running the ball, and it goes against their weakness, which is stopping the run. Cleveland is a really young team. I was reading their release, and a terrible release, but the one stat that 20, it was in there. 20 out of 46 game day actives from last week's game against the Rams were either rookie, first-year, or second-year players. And right. seven of them, seven starters, were either rookie or first-year players.
Where does the release rank on as far as bad releases?
Bottom five.
Yeah, bottom five.
It's a bad one, huh?
Everything is relative to the Cleveland Browns history that dates back to, 1945. It doesn't give anybody in Jacksonville any concern. Nobody cares about that stuff. Tell us how it matters to the league today.
Well, here's a great thing about releases, and we'll go back to the Browns. But I was thinking about you guys as I was getting ready for the Tampa-Houston game, because as I opened up Tampa's release, this is when you know one of the guys you're counting on is having a bad year, when all the stats after going into week 9 are 2010 stats.
And that's not good.
There's not one 2011 stat.
Right.
Mike Williams, who had a great rookie year last year, he had a page and a half. Every stat was 2010. Didn't say one thing about what he had done this year. I'm like, somebody's having a bad year. But I agree with Jeff. Back to the Browns. It's you got to run the ball against them. They're terrible against the run. I think they're 30th against the run.
They have 141.
They have a top six defense because no one throws the ball against them because they all run against them. Yeah, so it's very misleading.
They've got two rookies, and Brian can tell me the names. I know
Phillip
one of
Taylor.
Them is Phillip Taylor, and he's a first round pick defensive tackle.
Jabal Sherrard.
And Sherrard is it? How do you pronounce it again?
I haven't seen a pronouncer. I'm guessing that's Sherrard.
Yeah, and he's a second-round pick, first second-round pick that they had, and he's a defensive end, left defensive end. And Phillip Taylor is an absolute beast. I mean, the guy can run, he can pass rush, but the one thing he's not doing is staying in his gap and run defense, and that's a problem. Defensively they're young. The linebackers are average. Gokong and the other guy, the
Scott
outside,
Fujita.
I mean, they're just kind of guys. The middle linebacker, DeQuell Jackson's a good player. The safety, Ward.
Out.
Very good player, but he's been hurt the last game.
And he's already been ruled out for this week.
He's out for this week, so that's going to hurt them. Corners are pretty good. Sheldon Brown's, he's been around the block. The kid from Florida's a good player. Joe Hayden's a good player. Offensively, they don't run the ball worth a poo.
Now, Peyton Hillis has already been ruled out for this game, has been out the last five. That's really the reason, right?
They're trying to run a West Coast offense, and when you've got and obviously they've had some issues with Peyton Hillis.
Yeah, I heard about that.
What is going on there?
They're calling it in Cleveland called strep gate because, some people thought he should have played when he had strep throat, and he didn't.
But why is he missing now?
Contract.
Hamstring.
He's
got a hamstring, and he's missed four games. He's going to miss this week. And I think as a team, they're averaging like 3.2 yards per carry, which is a terrible number. They've got a rookie playing at guard. Joe Thomas at left tackle is very good. The center, Alex Mack, maybe the best in the AFC.
Go back to
that's saying a lot considering the guy in Mangold.
Go back,
good player.
Go back to Joe Thomas. I think he's
a little overrated. Yeah, he's a little overrated, but he's really athletic.
He's not real powerful.
But he's not powerful. He doesn't finish.
He's
got no nasty in him.
And he gets pushed around a little bit.
He doesn't have any nasty in him. That's the thing I don't like.
Four-time Pro Bowler, hasn't missed a snap.
Super smooth, though. Just an athlete.
But he
gets around a pile and he starts doing the old dance back a little bit.
I'll bet you Mincy gets after him pretty dang good.
That's going to be a great matchup. Great match.
Because I think Mincy will bring nastiness and physical play, and that's not the style of game Joe Thomas wants to play.
No, and I hope if when they go to sub, which is their pass rush front, Mincy has been going to left, which, by the way, Tony Poshos was over there, who Jaguars had to protect a lot in pass protection.
I put Schick over there, and I'd flip him because Joe Thomas will eat up Schick with the athletic ability. I mean, that's what Joe, that's the game Joe wants to play.
Yeah.
And go put him over on Tony Poshos, who wants nothing.
I put John Schick on Tony Poshos
say, go
all
to work.
Day long and say, and then, run around him.
And then I go put Mincy, who just wants to turn into a bar fight, and say, go beat up Joe Thomas. That's your best matchups.
I think it's going to be a great matchup, though. I mean, Joe Thomas, like I said, he's a premier tackle. He's one of the most athletic tackles in the game, but he just doesn't have a lot of bite in his dog.
Thoughts on Colt McCoy?
Oh, he's okay. I mean, you know what? When the Browns in their stellar release are raving about his career best game against the Rams, in which he was 67% completion rate, I believe.
That was 73.
73% completion rate. And he threw for, you know, 200 and 41. Some yards. And he doesn't have a touchdown. He doesn't have any 97. Interceptions.
97.3 passer
rating.
And they're
raving about it being his best game. And they scored how many points? 13?
Yeah. And the Rams, 12.
And the
four
Rams
field goals.
And the Rams are terrible,
I mean,
by the way.
Four field goals.
How good is Colt McCoy if they're raving about that? And that's his best game ever.
He's 5-10 as a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
So.
You know, the one guy I think to watch is number 15 for the Browns. He's a young wide receiver.
Greg Little.
Good player, can make some really good catches. Massaqua is just kind of okay.
Ben Watson made a terrific one-handed catch last
week. Catch against the Rams. But, I mean, how many times have we seen, you know, Ben Watson do that?
I haven't figured out how to pronounce the running back's name, the kid from
Obanaja.
I haven't seen it yet.
Very good.
Yeah. Hey. I don't know.
Keep going. I hope you stay with that.
What's
pace.
His first name?
Chris O.
Chris O.
Chris O.
There you go.
There you go.
What number does he wear?
25.
Yeah, that Chris O, number 25. That's a good way.
All right.
Go ahead, try it, Brian. Let's hear you do it.
The worst one is the worst one I've had all year.
Yeah.
Tight end for the Rams.
Oh, Michael Huna. Tyson told me. If you show it to me, I can pronounce it because Tyson Alualu did a pronouncer on it for us last year.
Tony, the Browns.
It's brutal.
The Browns media guide is so bad, they don't even have a pronunciation.
Yeah. that's bottom five, baby.
I will get it. I'll look it up, and I bet you I can do it because I won't even try until I get it back. This one, I don't know. After Sione Bua, and it's spelled P-I-O-U.
Bua.
Yeah,
Bua.
I don't get it. So, all right, we are due for a break. Let's take it now. The pronunciation of the Rams, at least, when we return on Jaguars Radio. All right, about 8 minutes left in the program. Time to look around the National Football League, get to some of the other games. And starting tomorrow night, folks turn on their TV to watch the Jets and the Broncos in Denver. What do you call that, the T-bone offense?
I'll say this, I'm excited to watch.
I am too.
I'm intrigued. Well, I cannot.
It honestly, sure seems like John Fox has embraced it, doesn't it? And he was the guy saying, well, I don't know.
I cannot imagine a team in today's NFL winning, throwing the ball 8 times and completing 2.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. And I am so intrigued to watch tomorrow night.
Now, how long do you think that can last?
Not long.
I didn't think it could last 4 games. And he's 3-1. And so I'm not going to try to guess. We talked about this off the air, all of us. I didn't think that you could win the NFL 1 game. I don't care who you play. Doing what they're doing, and they say what you want. He's 3-1 as a starter. It does not look pretty. The ball is not thrown very well, but they win. And this was a team that I saw before, and they were awful.
All right.
With the traditional Kyle Orton quarterback, they were terrible and couldn't win.
I can't wait to see it just because I want to see what kind of offense they're running because, you know, we haven't had a chance
it's
to
spread,
see it.
It's spread option, Jeff.
A spread option offense in the NFL.
It is spread option is what they run. Belly dive, pull it out the backside. They do some power. They do some counter stuff out of it. I mean, they run power football too, and then they drop back and pass the ball 8 times.
I give John Fox and his offensive staff credit.
Do you realize
mid-season change and then all of a sudden to change that offense up like they have? I mean, that's pretty impressive.
That offense, that team won back-to-back games without completing a pass. Without completing a pass, I just said, for 4 quarters.
Wow.
But don't you think at some point it's going to get caught up with?
The first pass was completed at the end of the 3rd quarter last week, and the game before, the last pass completed was sometime in the mid-3rd quarter. mid to late third quarter.
That's like the anti-Peyton Manning.
That is, no, it's even beyond that. That is like 9- and 10-year-old Pop Warner football where you right. don't throw the ball.
That goes back to the old Oklahoma days.
It's comical to me.
Jamel Holloway.
Yeah.
But this is what the guy does. Everyone is playing better.
What's hilarious is what John Fox said about Tim passing the ball. I was just like,
what did he say?
He actually said it.
He said, we don't have a passer.
We don't have a passer.
He was talking, basically what he was telling the reporter, and in ESPN, it's on ESPN.com, Jeff Darlington. Or is that NFL.com? I think it's NFL.com.
Yeah.
But basically what he said was, we can't worry about all that crap. He was talking about the passing. And he goes, we don't have a passer. We have a runner.
That Timmy, he's my guy.
Well, he is now.
But listen.
That's John saying that. It's kind of funny because, he was really biting his tongue.
But, guys, what do we all believe about guys that make – there's certain athletes that make people around them better. And I don't know what it is or why, but that team is playing better. And maybe it's just for a short – maybe it's an anomaly. I don't know.
Our buddy Pete Prisco may have had the best tweet of all. And we're not going to talk about it. But, folks, if you want to find out about it, check it out.
Yeah. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Here's one. Good one, too. Cincinnati and Baltimore. In Baltimore.
I think Baltimore is going to go in there
after
and just
getting their clock cleaned in Seattle.
getting embarrassed.
I don't think so. I don't know. Something about Baltimore I ain't buying. There's something about them.
It might be the quarterback.
Well, defensively, they're weak at the corner position. Ray Lewis is getting a little long, too.
They struggle scoring points.
Flacco is up and down.
But coming off a loss, they're the kind of team that comes off a loss and plays well.
Hey, you saw Tampa Bay last week. How are they going to do in Green Bay?
Get killed.
They are so bad.
Can Miami keep it going against Buffalo at home?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. Buffalo has a little bit of fraud in them.
I believe in Chan Gailey.
You can believe in Chan Gailey all you want. I saw it firsthand, and they were awful. And they followed up an awful performance at home against the Jets and got embarrassed against an average Dallas team.
Here's a replay of Super Bowl 11, Oakland and Minnesota.
Oakland
crush them.
Yeah. Minnesota's the young quarterbacks. They got growing pains.
Mm-hmm.
You love this one, Logs. It doesn't matter what the record is, Washington and Dallas.
Throw the records out.
Yeah.
That's a terrible. Not anymore.
That's a bad game because Washington's bad.
Yeah,
you know Mike.
And Shanahan's not doing a good job.
Shanahan's in trouble.
He's in trouble. He has changed his mind on the quarterback position.
I think he just changed it again.
Like I changed fishing poles on a boat, and that ain't good.
And that was a team that, four games in looked pretty good.
3-1.
They were playing great on defense,
and they looked good. I mean, it wasn't a 3-1 where you wondered how they got it. They looked good, but not now.
Let's see. What else have we got here? Arizona's at San Francisco. Seattle's at
That's a good game, though.
Arizona, San Francisco. That's a good game.
I like that game.
I didn't anticipate that based on John Skelton playing quarterback.
They
beat Philly. And the other thing is that that's the one team that I'm dying to watch that I have not had a chance to see yet this year.
San Fran.
Is San Fran. Because
they're fun to watch.
Terrible schedule because they weren't expected to be good. And Harbaugh is coach of the league by far, hands down.
Seven in a row. Let's see. Tennessee is at Atlanta.
That's the one I'm doing.
Okay.
Good game.
Smitty's got to win it.
Smitty's under the heat.
If they don't
win this past game.
It's a must win for Atlanta.
If they don't win that game, they're out of the playoffs, basically.
Can somebody explain to me the Phillip Rivers, Jay Cutler?
They hate each other.
I didn't realize
that. Hated each other since Jay was at Denver. A lot of trash talking. If you go back to the Denver-San Diego games,
look at that one.
They'd be pointing at each other, walking up the field, making gestures.
Yeah.
I mean, they hate each other.
Didn't realize that.
Which is great entertainment.
That's worth the price of ticket
awesome.
They hate each other. Yeah. It's awesome.
You don't hear about quarterbacks hating each other.
Because they're both punks, but it's fun to watch.
Philip Rivers.
I think Philip Rivers is a great guy.
I like Philip Rivers. I think he's just really ultra competitive.
That persona is what I'm saying.
And Cutler just kind of, he's got the worst body language of any quarterback in the NFL.
Is this a throw the record out?
He reminds me of Spalding playing quarterback.
Yeah, they make it fun, though.
Philadelphia at the New York Giants.
Giants have to win, which is what giving one away.
They will.
And Philly's reeling. They're going to go with Kafka. I think it's Kafka, isn't it? Is Kafka going to go, or is it going to be
And Philly's what we talked about, the free agency. It usually ends up like
this. Yeah, the Giants
have
to win that. And they should win. It's at home. They're better.
Tom Coughlin, baby.
Monday night Kansas
City. Big game. He's going to win it.
Monday night's Kansas City who?
New England, Kansas City at New England.
That's a blowout.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you on Sunday from Cleveland with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show, starting things off at 10 o'clock in the morning. Have a great rest of your week.
Finally, all the talk is over.